Hi, this is Steve Howe, and you're listening to me on the Yes Music Podcast. Have a good time. Listen. Bye.
So, it's 4.5 years since we talked to Steve Howe on the Yes Music Podcast, but he's back with a great new album, a solo album called Love Is, which has got John Davison on backing vocals and Dylan Howe on drums. And also, John Davison plays some bass guitar. It's a mixture of songs and instrumentals. So, hello, Steve.
Hello there, Kevin.
So, my question for you is, as a longtime listener and fan of your music, I was pleased how this album sounds really fantastic. So you were also the producer and the engineer of this record, so it's clear that your skills behind the mixing board is really grown over the years. Do you like the engineering role?
Well, yeah, I'll kind of explain what that is about. Is that primarily all the tracks, you know, started my own studio where I engineer them, and then, you know, when I move and work with the other chap, Curtis Schwartz, at his studio, it kind of goes into Pro Tools world and, you know, everything's possible, which is great. And then he kind of engineers. So basically, there's a dual engineer role here. I do the primary stuff, and then, you know, he does the later stuff. But of course, production is something that does interest me tremendously. You know, having produced, you know, nearly all of my solo albums before and been part of the, you know, Yes team of, when it says produced by Yes, it's also, you know, that's got a little bit of me in it as well. So I've been dabbling in this. I love working with producers, you know, over the years, all the people I've worked with, I've drawn a little bit from all of them, you know, starting with Joe Meek and then, you know, people like Trevor Horn and Bruce Fairbairn. I've never been out of touch with them. I've always watched, listened, taken their advice, tried their advice, you know, and so I always had respect for producers, and to find myself continually producing has obviously, you know, stimulated that for me, and I'm delighted to say I produced this record, because that says something else about what a guitarist needs to do, or any musician. He needs to see his sound through. It's not just like playing on a track and walking away and saying, thanks a lot, because it might be in the background and nobody EQ'd it or nobody put something sweet on it. So basically, you're at the mercy of your producer, so be your own producer.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm a big fan of your more recent releases like Nexus and New Frontier, which we spoke to Dylan about when it came out. But when you approach a solo album, do you like the total freedom? You know, this time you're writing, playing, producing, and as we're just saying, even engineering. So is this what you look forward to?
Well, I mean, it's what's natural. It isn't so much, it's what's needed. You know, I mean, if somebody else could come along and say to me, you know, I really believe in your solo albums, I mean, say 20, 30 years ago, and said, I really believe in your solo albums, I want to produce you, I might have said, wow, okay, you know, do it, you know, because I don't mind farming out responsibility. But the thing is that, no, it's primal, you know, it's fairly primal, it's fairly essential. But because I developed these tracks over a fair length of time, you know, I'm doing that myself, so I'm sort of steering where it is. So I kind of can't help doing the whole thing. If I'm looking at my own album, I do want to steer every increment, every digit of it. You know, it needs to kind of be under my supervision. Otherwise, you know, I'm throwing away a great opportunity because, as I said before to Mark, you know, it's a responsibility I've got to myself.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So, being a guitar player myself, Steve, I really liked seeing that you outlined in the sleeve notes all the instruments that you played on each song. That kind of takes me back to drama. So, what kind of inspires you to do those sorts of things?
Well, I started that right back on my first album, I think. You know, I sort of felt that, you know, it was partly filler also for an album to have, you know, nice images of guitars. You know, I'm a guitarist, as you said, you know, so I love the shape of guitar, particularly the 175. So I love those guitars. I don't find necessary to put photos of them in anymore, having had my own book out in the 90s, you know, Steve Howe Guitar Collection, which is now out of print, of course, and quite a rarity in itself on eBay. But basically, I felt that why I'm play the guitar like I do is not only because I love Jed Atkins and I love his versatility, but also because to my ears, you know, these guitars all have their own individual sound. So, you know, and when I'm using Rickenbackers or Dan Electros or Gretsches or things, you know, I want to put that in there somewhere. Only for those who are, you know, particularly interested, or just, you know, even bemused that I bother to do it. And sometimes it's only the featured guitar that really gets mentioned, because when I'm doing layering and I'm here in my own studio, I'm kind of like, you know, I've got a lot of guitars at my disposal, and something might just work really well and not get a mention. But primarily, I, the featured guitars get a mention. I enjoy it. I've never been discouraged to do it, but I've really only been encouraged to do it. So that's why I still do it.
Yeah. Well, I think there are a lot of different, very different guitar sounds. For example, on the start of Love is a River, which is incidentally a really great song. It's one of my favourites. So kind of process do you go through then to choose the right guitar sound for the right song?
It's really instinct. You know, it's my instinct. You know, I've got these guitars. I bought each one I bought at a time when I thought, this is great. I need one of these. You know, I need this for that or that for this. Or maybe I'll get round to this kind of guitar with that kind of sound. Mm. So really, it's just an instinctive thing. I've been asked that question a lot. And I kind of like answering it, because really it is. It's really the first thing, you know, that comes into my mind when I'm thinking about doing something. Say I've got a part in mind, I need to, you know, put this sort of a rhythm part, electric rhythm part in on a song. Then, you know, in my mind, I suppose I very quickly scan, almost like I'm driving down the road and I'm scanning the intersections, and I'm thinking, what? Talley or Strat or Les Paul Junior or Steinberger? I don't even have to think that, like, consciously about it. I just rotate round and I pick something and I think I'll go for that. Mm. And usually it's right. And they say that's also true about your instincts about decisions. You know, sometimes the first decision you think of, oh, I should do this, usually you spend 3 months not doing that, coming back to the thing that you originally thought was right. And that was the right thing to do, because your instinct, you know, and I've cultivated that musical instinct as much as I have done in, you know, my life generally, and business also. The instinct to, you know, drives you very, very assuringly into doing something that you may end up being happy with.
So the real interesting discovery that I made on this record is that your signature guitar, the Gibson ES-175D, appears or is featured on only one song, which is See Me Through, and the Gibson Les Paul Jr. appears on 6 songs. Was that just a case of finding more inspiration on the Les Paul Jr.?
Well, no. Most probably the 175 is on more places. Maybe it's not as featured as much as it might be. And also, I don't have a reason why I've got to play that. I mean, I do happen to love playing it, and, you know, I would say that, you know, I've been steering myself into using it a little bit more recently with some writing I was doing last year before all this happened, and while it's happened too. So I'm now looking more to develop the 175 again as a more regular use. But one of the reasons is that there's only one place in the world where that guitar is, in my own studio, and so I mustn't advertise that's where I keep it, of course. But basically what I'm saying is that I got to get a guitar that I'm comfortable with working out right then and there. And if I've got something important to do, like when I'm doing the trio album, for instance, when I work with the trio, it's always very important that I use the 175. So it's a guitar that I'm unavoidably adapted to, but at the same time, the reason I didn't only play that guitar was the fundamental answer to your question, is that there was a point when I felt restricted just to use one guitar. You know, I was always like, I'm the same old guitar, you know, and although it's a great guitar, I didn't want to feel that way, so I searched and looked around and ended up playing every kind of guitar you could imagine, but always knowing that guitar was back there too. So it's a little deceptive, that quote on the album, where it's only on one track. I'd say it is on more tracks, but basically the ones I remember and the primal things that I noted down on my track sheets, you know, so track 3's got a rhythm guitar and it might say Les Paul Jr. But the Les Paul Jr. is a very, very friendly, I can sit with it for hours and play, and I don't have to kind of worry about the stand, you know. It's a kind of like, a bit like a Telecaster. It's a very comfortable and easy guitar. And that sometimes, that's the, but also, of course, it makes the right noise. That's the most important thing. But also the fingerboard has an accessibility like a 335 has, where you can play anything, anywhere on the fingerboard, and it's just as easy as it is playing it in somewhere else. So there are reasons why, and particularly the number of frets is also very interesting about the guitars. I do like to have top D and sometimes top E, you know, above the standard guitar. So there's a multiple of reasons, but it's not because I don't want to play the 175. It's because I do adapt myself to have a very free thinking, you know, about what instrument I'm going to play.
So this album is a mix of instrumental pieces and songs, half and half. And as we've already said, your Yes bandmate John Davison provides backing vocal parts. And your combination of your voice and John's is fantastic on this album. It blends really well. And Mark and I both agree that this is what we think is your best vocal performance. So do you think John's involvement has inspired you a bit? And do you like singing lead vocal parts?
Well, I'll try and get round to those, but I would just say that, you know, over the years, you know, my voice has matured and I've learned my range a bit better and I know when I'm comfortable. So, you know, I think before John, I mean, basically all the singing on this record was most probably done before John sung, you know, so I can't really honestly been influenced. But as I was doing the vocals on the album, I was thinking of asking John. Then I did ask John and he was very enthusiastic. And then I said, why don't you play bass on the songs as well? And he was very enthusiastic. So I knew he was going to come up with things, which we could then sort of select the things that we felt worked best. In the guise of, going back to the first bit of the answer, in the guise that I was the lead singer, you know, that this wasn't an opportunity for John to take over my songs, like I welcome him to do in Yes, you know, and also, you know, the way that we've worked together and sung together over the last 8 or so years has proved to me that John and I genuinely connect when we sing, you know. I mean, it's not just like we try to sing together, you know, when we come on mic and when we're working, you know, we really get there, you know, together. And I think that that's why I asked him in the first place, was because I thought, well, it's a bit of an unusual thing to ask a kind of lead singer, you know, a star vocalist, to do the rudimentary job of harmonies for me. But because he was keen to do it and because it was fun, you know, that's why I did it. I mean, the grand scheme of things, right back in the 90s, had Keith West doing the same kind of thing. There's a guy that was, if you like, you know, the lead singer in Tomorrow and The In Crowd. And suddenly he did. But actually what we found sometimes, and the same with Virgil, bless him, was that Keith and Virgil both got, strangely enough, sometimes sounded like me. It was almost like I'd track myself up. And that was, you know, kind of a fun, amusing thing to hear. But yeah, I love Keith's voice and I love Virgil's voice, of course. And basically singing with other people is, you know, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to do. So to sort of harmonise, get John to harmonise with me, was a thing I felt very honoured, you know, that he would do that. So, I mean, it's a happy situation. I am very confident about my singing, and I don't need to do anything else other than open my mouth and sing, you know, but I do my practice always before I do any vocalizing, any recording, you know, I do my practicing like I do before I go on stage. So I you know, I know I've got to get in fairly good shape, but I know I've got to optimize on my physical, you know, capabilities. They've got to be as good as they can be. Yeah. Because after all, I was more inspired by the singing of Bob Dylan than I was by, you know, Mario Lanza. It wasn't that I wanted to be a singer, but I could see the benefit of, since I was writing songs so quite early on in my career, was I writing songs, was I thinking, well, you know, I'd like to do that. But I would add, just to wrap this question up, is that often I wish certain guitarists wouldn't sing. So I can understand why some people might say, oh, Steve, you know, just play the guitar. You know, I don't mind that. I'm very thick-skinned and I'm very resilient. But these songs, particularly on Love Is, I think I got a batch of songs there that were powerful for me to look at, and they were very personal and I identified with them a lot. And so when I look back at other song albums, I suppose, you know, I don't know if they were as important to me as what these songs are on here.
Yeah, that's great to hear.
fantastic. So I really like the running order on this album, Steve. Equal parts, songs, and then instrumentals. Was there a reasoning for this kind of arrangement of the songs?
Very much so. Not only did I think of it as a symmetry, you know, in my music, that there would be a balance, an equal balance of songs and instrumentals, but also, even more important, was the time and the care that we took to get that running order so that, and I would like to say how that is in preparation for the mastering. So what the mastering does is the guy, you know, some people skip this and they get their computers to do it. Oh, I can press mastering. Oh, it's mastered. You know, thank you very much. 10 seconds later, the whole album's mastered. Rubbish. That is no kind of mastering at all. And in fact, I tell you what, you know, the second reunion album of Asia suffered because somebody pressed one of those buttons, you know, that did it sort of automate and compressed the hell out of the record. So I dislike compression on a Spanish guitar, and I quite dislike it on regular acoustic guitars. It's not so bad on vocals and electric guitars and basses and drums and things. But if you get that bit of the record wrong, it's horrible. You know, so Simon Hayworth does a lot of the mastering on the records I've been involved in, you know, like all the anthology series as well. So basically, I turn to him and I say, look, this is the running order I like. I've wrestled with it. I've got really happy with it. But, you know, you can do more. And he brings more to it in the way that the listening experience, because I come from an album era. You know what I mean? Yes was an album band, nothing else. Didn't have singles, hardly at all. They helped us a bit, but fundamentally, our strength was that. And that's what I love creating. So that's what I did. Again, you know, following on from the other records I've made, that it went to Simon. We maybe spent, sometimes I go, you know, and sometimes he sends me his results, you know, but quite often it is a collaborative, but mostly he has got a way of designing the exchange from one number to another. And even with tricky things like Homebrew, where I've got a bunch of tracks which come from different eras, and I go to Simon and I say, okay, now I know this is weird, but we're going to go from this to that. He says, okay, well, we might have to do a bit of this on this and a bit of that on this, and then we'll tie them together. So there is a wonderful process that I really like, you know, that you've noticed. It means a lot to me that people actually don't just like the music, the songs, you know, but if they like the contour of the record, then that's what mastering is, and that's another part of production that I think is really something I've learnt about. And not that I do it, you know, I don't physically do it, but I'm the guy who's got to say, yeah, it's there, you know, and sometimes it takes a few hits, you know, it takes a few attempts.
Yeah, fantastic. So I find the lyrics to be very positive, especially Love is a River and On the Balcony, songs that we much need in these crazy times. Were these lyrics written recently?
No. I mean, this whole album had got nothing to do with the crisis. It all predates that. And so when we were all thinking like do you remember how we used to be thinking? You know, life's easy, or no, life's not easy, but life's the joy. We can get on with it. There's easy parts, there's difficult parts. But there wasn't the bloody virus. So basically, at that point, I was writing these songs, and I wrote some other songs, which were actually, you know, I don't know how, the preemptive of you know, a world in difficulty, because I was seeing a world in difficulty anyway, you know, before this enormous difficulty that we've got. So, yeah, I did want to bring an uplifting sense of positive, you know, caring, loving, sharing, ecology, you know, I'm quoted as quite a few interviews have already been asked about how I dragged Alexander Humboldt into this, because he's the guy who 200 years ago said, he was an explorer, and he went to South America, and he said, we are destroying the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that was 200 years ago. So like I used to then say, Joni Mitchell said 1970, you know, the spots on the apples, and we're still using pesticides today.
Yeah.
And the things that are corrupting our world are still going on, because people are making lots of money out of it, they're very happy about it, and they can't believe, you know, in holistic, you know, because you see, what the problem is that science is great, you know, there's so much to glean from science, but there's got to be a balance with science, which isn't there at the moment, which is true ecology, which is holistic, naturopathic, you know, organic world, you know, and that's what we live in, and that's what the animals are living in, the next creatures we should respect after the human race. if not before the human race, it's the animals and the insects and the creatures, you know. So when, while we're still wrecking that world, we're wrecking our own world. So, you know, I believe that's not obvious in my lyrics, but it's been part of my story ever since I became a vegetarian in 1972. So, you know, I've been on a path that many people have realized is a positive route.
Well, you've mentioned the possibility maybe with Yes of doing some kind of online performance at the end of this year, which would be brilliant after having to rearrange the Yes tour, which I'm very much looking forward to next year. And you've also mentioned that there's some movement on perhaps a new Yes studio album. How important is it for you personally to make sure a new record is made for Yes?
Well, I've got to correct you on something there. I may have inadvertently said that Yes might do something on the internet. I don't think that's accountable. You know, I'm not accountable for that statement.
Okay.
I don't know that it's going to be possible. Sure, I'd be delighted if we found something, you know, but that's not on the agenda. No. And also, any talk about a new record, I've got to say less about it. And all I can say is that, you know, in a few months, we might see an announcement coming up of us, you know, mentioning what might be going on in that field. But at the moment, I'm not saying anything at all. You know, and that's it, really.
Yep.
I can't say any more.
Okay. Well, that's been absolutely brilliant. Thank you very much indeed for your time, Steve. And I recommend this new album to everyone, Love Is. It's a really, really enjoyable album. I've played it many, many times already. And thank you indeed for your time.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Thanks, Mark. And it's a pleasure to talk to you. And I'm delighted that you like the record so much. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.